Welcome to The Word at Westminster, a podcast with talks, studies, interviews, sermons, and more from Westminster Church in Barrie, Canada. It's about learning and living God's Word. Welcome, everybody, to this interview, which is a joint effort for two podcasts, The Word at Westminster, which is the podcast for Westminster Church in Barrie, Canada, and my own, The Pulse podcast. Our topic is anxiety in children, and our guest is Lindsay Stevanato. So before we get into the questions, let me introduce her to you so you know who you're hearing from. So Lindsay is an occupational therapist who is the owner and operator of Lindsay Stevanato Children's Therapy Services. She has had a heart for children with challenges. She has a heart with children with challenges. She has a passion to see children be the best they can, be with whatever skills they have. She began her career in 1986 at Laurentian Hospital in Sudbury. After 1 year in adult rehabilitation, she moved right into pediatrics at their Children's Treatment Center. After seeing many children struggling with sensory processing disorders, she became certified in the administration of the Sensory Integration and Praxis Test in the United States in 1990. She then became a qualified observer through Sensory Integration International for therapists wishing to become certified in the administration of this test. And she is one of only two observers in Canada. Lindsay has also worked in London, Ontario at CPRI as a senior therapist for school health services, and then moved to Barrie in 1991 as a manager for school health services through home care. Home care then became CCAC, which many of us have heard of, where Lindsay became an independent contractor and worked at RVH as the first occupational therapist in the neonatal care unit. In 2001, Lindsay saw the growing trend with publicly funded agencies moving to a consultation model. She believed that a hands-on approach was most effective to bring changes in a child's function. Thus, her clinic was formed. So, Lindsay, I just want to thank you. Thank you for coming on these podcasts, and I appreciate your time and your expertise, and thought we'd get right into it. So what's your, I know I've said a little bit about your background here, but what's your experience working with children and specifically interacting with kids who are struggling with anxiety?
Thank you, Matthew. And yeah, you really did nail it there with a lengthy intro. But I've been working with children for approximately 34 years. And when we say occupational therapy, so many people do not know what that means. And I think even when we're saying that with regards to children, you think, oh, children don't have any occupation, but really they do. Their occupation is to be a student and to be a player, like someone that is easy to play with. So we tend to try to assist them in fully participating in these roles. And I would say the profession itself has definitely changed since 34 years. We went from primarily seeing children only with physical issues, and it has really expanded into the mental health field. Mm-hmm. And I would say the last 10 years, it has greatly increased, looking at emotional regulation, self-regulation, behavior, and of course, anxiety. And I would say with COVID the last 2 years, this has even increased more. In our particular practice, we are seeing younger and younger kids struggling with anxiety. The incidence pre-COVID was looking like about 3% of our 3 to 17-year-old population. And we suspect this has jumped as high as 7 to 10%.
Wow. So that increase has come, you know, in the past 2 years since COVID has happened?
Yes, there has been a great increase.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So when we talk about anxiety with kids, are we basically kind of talking, you know, up to 17 years old? Is that kind of basically that where you would put children in that category?
Yeah, I mean, we treat kids up to 18, but that's typical. The 0 to 18 is considered pediatrics.
Okay. So just so we're on the same page, like what is anxiety, generally speaking? I want to ask that because, and this is kind of pulling back the lens a little bit because people use that word a lot and they say, I'm anxious or I have anxiety. And then there's actually someone might be diagnosed with anxiety. So, you know, what is anxiety generally speaking and what makes anxiety in children maybe different from anxiety in adults, if there is a difference?
Well, definitely there is a normal worry that happens with children, especially if they're experiencing new environments, saying a speech. I mean, I have a bit of anxiety right now, but that's healthy. Then there is a worry that actually stops a child from engaging into their what we call work, which I just described as going to school and playing. So there, that's when you start to see some symptoms rear its head. So things like decreased concentration, they're not sleeping or eating properly, they become very irritable, there's anger, there's outbursts, there's constant worry and negative thinking. They feel tense, fidgety, uses the toilet often, they're crying, they're clingy, and of course of those tummy aches, right? And then they become, these worries become excessive and uncontrollable. This is a good indication that's where help is needed. Worry can definitely be due to stressful events, such as moving house or moving schools, parents fighting, there's death, illness, accidents, bullying, and abuse and neglect. So the kinds of anxiety we can see in kids is separation anxiety. So that is being separated, that separation from people they trust is overwhelming, as well as social anxiety. And that is really having a lot of difficulty engaging with their peers. And then performance anxiety is really when that frustration comes when they're not able to be perfect or things just don't go the way they anticipated.
I'm sure we'll get into, I'm sure stuff will, but social media will come up too, but you know, the whole idea of comparing and perfection and seeing what people are doing. And so I'm sure that plays into it. I came across this, the word worry apparently derives from an old German word, Wurgen. I don't speak German, so I don't know, meaning to strangle, constrict, or choke.
Oh, that was interesting. That makes sense.
Yeah. So when you talk about those things in kids, like adults can experience those things too. So is part of the difference basically that kids either maybe have trouble communicating their feelings as to what's going on? Is that the main difference that you would say about anxiety in children versus adults?
I think so. And I think also how it actually plays out. So with kids, it's behavior. Whereas as adults, we've learned how to filter and how to mask and how to inhibit and those kind of things. Whereas children, they wear it on their sleeve. They're, you know, it really comes out and you need to dig deep and figure out why that's happening.
Okay. No, that's helpful. Yeah. Thank you. So we talked about the pandemic. So how has the pandemic intensified or worsened anxiety in children? You've already mentioned in your own practice, there's a heightened, not only over time that, you know, moving to more kind of mental health things, but then with kids and then anxiety going up since the pandemic started. So how has it intensified or worsened anxiety in children?
As I mentioned, worry can start by stressful events and change is a big one. So COVID made the whole world stop and change very drastically. So a child's nice structured routine becomes quite unstructured. And most children really thrive in a structured environment and they want a predictable world. So not going to school, having mom and dad at home, sleeping and eating routine is a little bit altered. Their screen time tends to go up and physical activity goes down, because they are using up their time mostly on screens. And parents were really, really struggling because they're at home working and they don't have anyone looking after their children. And so the screens tended to get up. And the big one is not seeing their friends, and that all of those things have a great effect. And then it's time to go back to school. And we see that separation anxiety. They've been home with mom and dad for a year and a half. And the social anxiety, because they haven't been around peers for a year and a half. So those two things really became, had really increased.
Can you say a word about healthy amount of screen time? And by the way, I really appreciate what you said about, you know, screen time going up and everyone's struggling to get by, to navigate these new norms, working from home, whatever. And at the same time, the physical activity. One of the things that my wife, Laura, and I have talked about is how even just going to school, how much physical activity is involved in that, not to do anything to do with gym class, just like walking to school, going out for recess, coming home. And so we had to kind of rethink how the routine was able to kind of somehow compensate for some of that. But you talk about screen time. What is kind of a healthy level? Because I feel like it's gone up for a lot of people and we're not through the pandemic, but things are changing and evolving. Hopefully that's coming down, but what is healthy And hopefully we're forcing that to come down in a healthy way. So we just a bit of word about health and screen time for kids.
Absolutely. And it's unfortunate that once you have allowed a child to increase their screen time, it is very hard to decrease that screen time and bring it down. So a healthy amount, and it is age dependent, but from 0 to 2 years of age, the Pediatric Association says zero screen time. You can video chat, but zero screen time. To about school entry or 7 years of age is 1 hour a day. And really the top they're saying is 2 hours a day. So I've had families come in and they're up to 5-6 hours a day. So their physical activity is decreased. Those little walks to school that you were mentioning help regulate the child so that they are ready to go in the classroom and learn. So that is a really good strategy to just helping a child regulate.
What's the link with anxiety then? Is it that their brain is getting stimulated and they're starting to worry or see things out in the world? Like what is the connection there?
Well, I think it's their world is been upset, and it's the lack of structure and the lack of predictability, and things aren't how it used to be. So when that is, a child's feeling that, it is very stressful for them, as well as the other instances we talked about is just, you know, a child witnesses an awful accident, things like that. There are life experiences that then escalate the anxiety.
I appreciate you using the word stress and children being under stress, because one of the things I think as a parent, and I've heard others say too, it's like, well, our kids, every day is Children's Day. They don't have any stress. We do everything for them. You know, we make their meals, send them off to school, but they do have stress. It's just different than what we might consider it. And so we might overlook it.
And stress can just be that child has figured it out that they may not be as competent in some skills that other kids are. So for example, reading. And so they're going to the classroom. They go, oh, no, I have to read in front of the class. So that is very stressful. So there are things like that are skill related that cause a stress.
Wow. Let's look at things from a specifically Christian perspective. And not that what we've said up to this point is not in that category, but I want to kind of focus the lens a little bit. So, you know, there's a variety of scriptures I could maybe reference, but I think one of the ones that is often cited in discussions about worry, anxiety is Philippians 4, verses 6 and 7. So Paul famously says, do not worry about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus, end quote. And so my sense, my own read of the situation, just as a pastor, is that sometimes some Christians can equate any form of anxiety or worry with unfaithfulness, right? And so, you know, I think that's too simplistic. So can you just share a few thoughts on, from a Christian perspective, about how we might think of anxiety in a way that is more theologically healthy?
I do agree that it is too simplistic. We absolutely strive for what Paul is saying in Philippians, but anxiety can be a result of stressful events, like I said before, or circumstances that we go through in life. And I think God would want us to reach out for help, just like he would for physical illness. And we're struggling. And I think he wants to show us he can walk alongside us through these times. It causes us to have a greater closeness to him. It gives us this experience that we can share with others if they're going through this. And we may never know why we're going through this. And we need to figure out how this can be a positive in our life. And so often we hear, do not be afraid. And we feel we are sinning or separated from God if we feel fear. But we're human and only God is perfect. So, and I remember my parents having this saying on their wall, and it said, God is not done with me yet. So we have much to learn and experience. And I feel God has provided us with some pretty great professionals out there to teach us these tools so that we use them in life and throughout any experience. So,
yeah. Yeah, that's helpful. I love that quote on the wall, not done with me yet. I think it reminds me of something I think Pastor Craig Groeschel said at one point. I think it's, if you're not dead, you're not done.
I believe that.
Maybe a bit of a different context, but no, that is good. Yeah, no, thank you for sharing that. As I think about that passage from Philippians and, you know, our relationship with God, the peace of God, one of the things that strikes me about it too, is that it's a process, right? Mm-hmm. As we grow in our relationship with Him and as we learn more about God, as we seek to grow in maturity as disciples of Jesus, mm-hmm. we will grow in many ways. And that's a process. It's not like maturity is like this end date. Okay, I did X, B, and A, B, and C, and then I've arrived. Mm-hmm. But it's a bit of a process. So maybe that's something helpful to us. But can we talk a few minutes about the home? So we've talked mm-hmm. about the home. There's been a lot of change. Mm-hmm. The home is so obviously so formative in the lives of children. And so obviously what goes on in the home is very important, and there's been so much change and disruption. So, you know, what should parents be doing in the home to be good role models for their children?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a great one. And I think too, is we always start with some lifestyle changes to help reduce the risk of stresses and anxiety. And number one is sleep. Actually, I wouldn't say it's in order, but there's four biggies that you want to attend to. And the first one is sleep. So depending on age, we're looking from 10 to 12 hours of good sleep a night for these kids. So they should be uninterrupted sleep, not disruptive sleep. And they shouldn't have too much of a trouble falling asleep. So if it taking more than a half hour to fall asleep, we should look at that and see what's happening before that hour before bed. That's causing the disruption. And then we want to look and see, are they eating properly? Are they eating a good variety of foods? And are they eating routinely? Is it just grab something as they go, or is it an actual sit down routine dinner? And then physical activity is so important. As I mentioned before, with regulation, even they need this physical activity, and they should be getting at least an hour a day of physical activity. And then that big one, screens. That is a huge one. And a good indication that is really affecting your child is if they are struggling to get off of it. When you're asking them to get off of it, they actually, their behavior increases, or they've gotten off of it, but their behavior spikes after they're off of it. So you do see that correlation, and you go, oh, there's something wrong here. It's gotten too much. So as I mentioned before, anywhere between 1 to 2 hours a day for a school-aged child is the amount you're looking for.
So these are things that parents would do and put in place for the kids themselves. Mm-hmm. Any kind of attitudes that should be consistent in terms of the parents and their own behavior?
Absolutely. And we dig deep a little bit with parents, because often we see an anxious parent that has an anxious child, and they have to deal with their own anxiety. And I would say very healthy way of dealing with this at home is be very conscious of what you are saying in the presence of your child. So especially if there's some school anxiety, you're not going to talk in front of them about, oh, your teacher did that again. Oh, like, I don't agree with that. What are they doing? They're not attending to your needs. So they complain about the school in front of the child. So I would say be very cautious of the negative talk that's happening in the home, and try to switch it around to positive as much as possible. And that goes especially too with even acknowledging your child. Try to not always acknowledge them in a negative way, but more of a positive way. So, oh, what are you doing that for? Or they walk in the room and you've got this terrible frown on your face. When they walk in the room, try to light up more. And those are just some simple things to really just to help your own attitude in front of them and make sure that you're not displaying things that are going to affect them.
And I guess being an example in other ways too, like you mentioned some of those other things, we need to be being examples for a healthy place of screens in our lives. Exactly. We need to be providing a healthy example about, well, what we're eating and all those sorts of things. So we can't expect it of them if we're not doing it.
And I had I had a father who the child was having a real hard time falling asleep. And he said, well, I'm lying with him every single night. And I said, oh, really? And he goes, yeah. And I'm on my phone and I'm trying to do my my work on my phone. I said, well, maybe that's one indication. So I said, if you could, I mean, the bright light, he's distracted, there's many things. So we want a parent to be present in the moment with their child and not distracted. Mm. There's an actual book that could probably help. It's called Anxious Kids, Anxious Parents, and it's written by Lynn Lyons. And it's a great resource for parents.
I came across this quote by author James Baldwin. Children have never been very good at listening to their elders, but they have never failed to imitate them.
Absolutely.
Substitute maybe the word elders for parents in there. But so how does a parent know that their child's worry? And if you've touched on this a little bit, but I just want to kind of bring it into focus. How does a parent know that their child's worry or anxiety is outside the healthy range? Let's just kind of be clear about that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think when worry goes to a point where it actually paralyzes the child, so it's become so excessive, there's a constant worry. They won't engage in things they used to engage in with activities. They won't go to places that they used to go to. Those are all those big red flags that it's time to get some help.
Right. Okay. Well, that's good. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And then being present to notice and to see, right? Mm-hmm. So thank you for this. I really appreciate your wisdom, your insight, your practice. And leading up to this, I've been aware of how many people who have said that they've somehow been helped by you, or by your clinic. But what should parents do who need some help helping their children but aren't sure where to turn? Mm-hmm. You know, because I'm sensing that there's people listening to this who, you know, have been, you know, they've got some insights. This has maybe helped them to think of things in a new way. We want them to take that next healthy step. Mm-hmm. So what should parents do who need some help helping their kids but aren't sure where to turn? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think I do believe in getting the counseling that you need. And I think the gold standard right now for anxiety is using the cognitive behavioral approach. So this what's called CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. And it's used for kids quite young, and it can be used in more of a play setting. So that I would really look for if you're looking, as well as if you can possibly find a Christian counselor that uses CBT approach, they actually tend to replace those negative thoughts with scripture to memorize. So they still use that approach, but they use it in a more Christian perspective.
Mm. Yeah. And in terms of Christian therapists too, to me, it always it seems like it just goes to worldview, right? Like if you're going in for seeing someone help about something significant in your life, well, what's the point of life? Or what's my purpose? Like those questions are going to be different, right? Based on what the worldview of the person is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, that's absolutely true.
So Lindsay, thank you so much for this. I appreciate your time and your insight. Is there any kind of parting thought or piece of advice you'd have to people listening?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think just to really pay attention to your child. If there's something that's not quite the way it was, or you're see their behavior changes in some way, pay attention to that. Go with your gut. And I've always told parents, if you have a gut feeling, that is there for a reason. And make sure that you're listening to it.